Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with Kent Wascom, the author of a terrific debut novel, The Blood of Heaven. And we'll also hear from Joanna Leek and Carrie Chappell about the most recent issue of Bayou Magazine. Kent Wascom is a New Orleans native and a writer you'll be hearing about a lot this summer. He's the author of a splendid first novel, The Blood of Heaven, set in a fascinating time in our nation's history and a fascinating place, the West Florida parishes stretching from Baton Rouge to Pensacola. He won the 2012 Tennessee Williams Literary Festival Prize for Fiction, and he's joining us today from New Mexico. Kent, welcome to The Reading Life.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for having me.
This is an amazing book with a spellbinding protagonist. Angel Woolsack is his birth name, and he undergoes many transformations during the course of this novel.
Yes, Angel transformations begin as he's taken from the northern neck of Virginia into what was then the Missouri, not even the Missouri Territory. It was just northern Louisiana, upper Louisiana it was called, at the behest of his itinerant preacher father. And there they meet the Kempers, who are similarly brought up by another, what we would term a religious fanatic. And as he falls in with the younger Kemper brother, Samuel, he becomes enraptured with them and follows Samuel to go and find his brother, Reuben. And in that process, becomes a Kemper himself and all of the things that entails, which includes avarice and wrath, and a propensity for revolution.
And violence, a propensity for violence as well.
Yes, that's the funny thing. As doing the research for the book and read through people's letters, you read through court cases and documents, and you find that just as in our own time, violence is just utterly ubiquitous, and it was just a different kind of violence. You cut off someone's ears or you flogged them with a whip, as opposed to some of the things that we would see today.
And I thought it was so interesting at one point he begins to see crime as something almost spiritual.
Right. The section that you're referring to, yeah, is when he's mugging a man in Natchez. He's become something of a highwayman. And it's the idea that both the robber and the one who's being robbed are in this intense position of faith. One, that you'll obey me and give me your money. The other, that you will allow me to retain my life at least.
Now, his voice is so extraordinary. It's got that incantatory quality of the preacher, and it's got also the visceral kind of imagery of a man of violence. What is it like for you to channel that voice at such length?
It was a dark process to live in Angel's head for 3 years. No, it was something that was very difficult to shake off. The end of the writing day, which then, you know, I'd be going to work after that, and you have a very angry 80-year-old man in your head.
I know. I was
horrible,
a little
horrible thing.
I was a little scared to call you, actually.
No, yeah. Thankfully, I've shaken him off. But now I'm on to Benjamin Butler.
Oh boy!
So the next book that I'm working on is the continuation in the prologue of The Blood of Heaven. Angel mentions his son and his mistress. And the prologue is 61, at the eve of secession. So the next book, which is very, very different, follows the son and his mother as during the occupation of New Orleans from 1862 to 63, with the infamous Benjamin Butler being a chief character.
Oh, Kent.
Utterly fascinating to dig into.
Louisiana readers are going to love you for a long time.
I hope so.
This is great. So I wonder if you'd read us a little paragraph, just to give us a taste of Angel's voice.
Sure thing. And this is from the prologue. Pray for us who are annually subjected to those tropical atrocities, hellish heat, disease, and hurricane, who live along the fertile nethers of the South on the country's purest coast. Our corner of the Gulf is soaked in blood, brothers and sisters, and I have given my fair share to the tide. From the heel of latter-day Louisiana to Mobile Bay lies the holy land I wish to make with my brother Samuel Kemper. We fought our revolution in 1804 in what was then called West Florida. We failed through foolishness and gall and losing sight of God's true path. Afterwards, I'd try once more to take that country through scheming and plotting and following the dreams of great men, but all for nothing. In 1810, a gaggle of planters would have their revolution, and they were too respectable to call on Angel Woolsack. They had a country, so they called it, for but a few months. No matter. At that time, I was wringing the first of my fortune from black flesh. And the half century since has passed like hang fire, and I'm glad my brother or any of the rest didn't live to see what's coming now.
That is amazing. That whole prologue is so amazing.
Thank you so much.
Just pulls you right in. So New Orleans is also a part of this novel. Tell us about New Orleans at that time in history and what drew you to this time in history.
Well, New Orleans at that time is really in a liminal space, being sort of, for economic and strategic reasons, pawned off by Napoleon on the Spanish, allowing them some a modicum of control over the territory. And so, but at the time, so you had a very small Spanish governance, a large French population, and an increasing American presence. So it was really this trilingual, tripartite conflict that was coming to a head. And the Spanish were quickly subsumed to the interests of the latter two parties. It's a strange time and place because everything was in transition or in flux. The French, who had been there for so long, and trace my own people who were living at the time there for, 150 years. And you see these outsiders, these Americans, these Anglos come in and rapaciously begin taking things over in the way that only Anglo-Americans can.
And you've also created this wonderfully unconventional love story in this book.
Yes, there would be several.
there are several, true.
There is a few.
So tell us about Red Kate. She's such an extraordinary woman. It's such a great character.
Well, that's the interesting thing. In the early drafts of the book, she was a very minor presence. She did not end up with Angel. He had went on a completely different track. But as people read those early drafts, they kept saying, we really like Kate. And so when I was doing the big rewrite of the penultimate draft, she just sprung out of the church, out of that brothel. Her character, really, a lot of it comes from reading Indian captivity narratives from around the turn of the century, where you would have these women relating their lives. And what I found far less interesting was the captivity itself, but really what they came from, this really brutal, hardscrabble upbringing in the piney woods of the South.
And life was so ruthless and difficult then, and sheer survival was an achievement, don't you think?
Absolutely. Now, at every moment, whether disease or violent death, you are constantly against the wall, constantly threatened. And it took a particular kind of people to deal with that. And it's the same kind of people that can wage a very vicious insurrection or war, or a war of acquisition, as the same people went with Jackson and swept across from New Orleans in 14. And then fought the Creeks and took East Florida by 17.
Now, I just have to say, you are a very young man, and this is a very long and amazing book. When did you know you were a writer? For a first writer, this is an extraordinary achievement.
Thank you. Oh, I think I always knew. I always loved reading as a child. And once you go through the process of figuring out that, people act as little names down there at the bottom. Someone who wrote these things that I loved so much and wanted to do it. But I think the real moment I realized that I wanted to be a writer, that this is what I wanted to do, I was in a parochial school, and they wanted us to write a little story, probably a paragraph or so, as a sequel to Treasure Island. And I never liked prompts. And even at age 7, I didn't like prompts. So I wrote a story about Long John Silver being menaced by the zombified remains of someone he'd killed. And reading it in front of this class full of other 7-year-olds and watching them, their eyes widen with terror. and the teacher blanching. And then at that moment, I knew this is what I want to do.
Power, the power.
Right.
I have to ask you that New Orleans question. Where'd you go to high school?
Oh, well, actually, I went to high school in Pensacola, Florida.
Uh-huh, because you grew up here and there, right?
Yeah, born in New Orleans. My family lived on the North Shore, Slidell, more properly. But the family originally had lived in New Orleans for years and years.
And then you studied writing at Florida State after you graduated from LSU. Who were some of the teachers who influenced you there?
Well, chiefly Bob Chicoches.
Uh-huh.
At whose house I'm staying at the moment.
He's a wonderful writer.
It's glorious, and his new book, The Woman Who Lost Her Soul, is coming out in September, and it's magnificent. Yeah, Bob, for sure, who told me when he saw the maybe second or third draft of the book to throw out 450 pages.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's how much I trust Bob. And Florida State really has a fantastic group. And it's so varied. Robert Owen Butler, who's spectacular, and Mark Weingartner, from whom learned structure quite a bit. The structure and the mechanics.
Oh, they're both great teachers. So here you go, making your debut. I think this is going to be an exciting time for you this summer.
Seems so. I've been looking at the tour agog.
So you have the best in the biz supporting you, I think. You can meet Kent Wascom Thursday, June 6th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. This novel is a knockout, so don't miss it. Thank you so much, Kent.
Thank you, Susan.
I'm very happy to welcome Joanna Leek and Carrie Chappell to The Reading Life today. Joanna is the editor of Bayou Magazine, which just published issue 59, and Carrie is one of the associate editors. Bayou Magazine is published by the University of New Orleans Creative Writing Workshop, and this new issue has lots of great stuff for summer reading pleasure. Welcome, Joanna.
Thanks.
You too, Carrie.
Thank you.
Now, Joanna, I love the look of Bayou. It has such energy and it's so attractive. Tell us a little bit about how long it's been around.
Well, Bayou started in 1991. A friend of mine, Laurie O'Brien, who's a wonderful poet and sadly has since passed away, was editing a magazine at the University of West Florida called The Panhandler. And The Panhandler had been around for a long time. It had a very respected reputation, was a wonderful little small journal. But as of late, it had sort of fallen into a lack of energy. The caliber of the magazine had sort of started to slide. And she and some of her colleagues at University of West Florida came up with an idea to re-energize it. And so that idea was to rename it, give it a brand new name, and to make it a collaborative undertaking between her university and UNO. And Rick Barton and I, at the time he was the Dean of Liberal Arts and I was directing our graduate program, decided that was a great idea. We jumped on it, and for a while, Bayou came out one issue from University of West Florida that Laurie edited and one issue from UNO that I edited. And that went on until about 1994 when they decided they wanted to have Panhandler back, and we decided we would love to have Bayou all to ourselves, and from then on, we've been doing two issues a year.
No turning back.
No turning back, and it's been a wonderful ride. I've been delighted, and I'm really proud of the things the students have accomplished because really the student editors are the ones whose image the magazine reflects, and the changes are mostly student initiated, and the look of the magazine and a lot of the new online presence of the magazine is really due to the efforts of our wonderful student associate editors.
Now, Carrie, you're a poet who's studying in the Creative Writing Workshop. How did you get involved with Bayou?
I began working for the magazine as a poetry reader my first year in the program. And at that point, the current associate poetry editor, a student editor, Matt Groneman, was, I guess, had his eye out for who could take over his title after his graduation. So I sort of put my hand in and said, I like this. I want to be involved. And that began my work. I was eventually named associate poetry editor and worked with Kay Murphy at the time, who was then poetry editor. And then I just continued showing that I was interested and eventually found a nice, wonderful opportunity as to serve as co-associate editor with my friend and colleague, Melissa Remark.
So now are you in turn looking around for the next person to come along?
Actually, Melissa and I will be leaving the journal this May, and so we have been looking and talking without having to look very hard. There are lots of people that want to be a part of this magazine, and that's something we are grateful for and that the university, I think, will benefit from this energy of people coming to the magazine over and over again.
Carrie and Melissa are graduating this spring, and their followers, the people that will follow them in the editorship, have been associated with the magazine. It's Bayou's kind of part of the graduate program culture, and people start as readers, and those that are interested kind of learn the ropes, and then we've had really good luck at people finding good replacements.
So what do you learn from editing a journal, Carrie, that adds to your work as a poet?
Oh my gosh. I guess one of the things that stands out the most to me is just a knowledge of what my contemporary culture in poetry writing is doing. Each issue of our magazine offers a variety of poetic form, voice, style, and to see those things print and us have the crucial conversations of what do we like about this poem? What's happening with this particular speaker? And those conversations, as they sometimes happen in our workshops at the creative writing workshop, continue to inform anybody that I think is reading and writing currently in any of the genres, but for me in particular, in poetry.
Just because Bayou is published by the Creative Writing Workshop doesn't mean that's the only work it publishes. This is a journal that has a fairly broad reach.
Actually, we do not accept publications from anybody affiliated with our program or the university. If they've been gone 10 years and they submit something that we like, we'll make an exception. But the submissions come from all over the country. And there is a UNO publication called Ellipsis, which publishes student work and faculty work. But Bayou is for all the world beyond UNO. And we've been really, really happy that Gary and I were just talking about the caliber of the submissions is just remarkable. And we've been fortunate enough to have really talented writers and to be able to publish wonderful creative works. I also wanted to add something else. I think for writers, there's some practical things about working for Bayou because you can see how your work will be received when you submit it to other places. It gives you an insight. And also, our student editors have a chance to work with writers to edit their piece to get it more acceptable for publication. And I think that editing process, working with a writer, from what I've heard, has been really helpful and interesting. And it's something that our Bayou students seem to value a lot as part of their work experience on the magazine.
Now tell us about the two prize-winning pieces in this issue of Bayou. One honors the late Jim Knutson, who wonderful, wonderful UNO professor.
Well, the prize for fiction was established to remember Jim, and the selection of the piece is, you know, it's always a hard job, but I think we've done a wonderful job, this particularly in this issue. The winner is a story that I'm very, very fond of. And if anybody picks up Bayou, I urge them to flip to that first and read it.
And Ari Braverman, who is actually a New Orleanian herself, the winner of the Jim Knutz Prize, the staff screened the fiction contest submissions. And then we gave 10 to our judge this year, Michael Knight, who lives in Tennessee. And there was just an overwhelming response to that story because of the character who follows Mick Jagger and deems him her spirit guide. It was just too fascinating a storyline to not get some sort of recognition, and we're glad that it was sent to us.
I did love it. And Michael Knight is certainly a wonderful writer,
yes,
to have as a judge as well. And the Poetry Prize honors Kay Murphy, who taught
and served as poetry editor for many years And actually, the Poetry Prize was begun last year, and Kay served as our inaugural judge. And I think she's such an active poet herself. She still would love to be more involved in the journal. And this was a way for us to continue to remember her fabulous contribution to our work.
And she'd be a tough judge.
Yes, certainly.
So tell us about the winner of this prize.
Actually, Benjamin Sutton is a Louisianan from Lake Charles who I was fortunate enough to meet briefly out at AWP when we took not this issue but our last issue and some of our older works to the conference this year in Boston. And this poem, our judge, Don Lundy Martin, was just... This was the standout poem. Then The Unabridged is the title of Benjamin's work, and it's so alluring on the page. It's spatially doing some very, very striking things, and it's also, I mean, I remember Carolyn Hembry, the poetry editor, saying, like, to me, actually, this is a Southern poet that you should be paying attention to.
Ah, oh, that's great. So where can people pick up a copy of Bayou?
You can find Bayou this week and afterwards at all of the local independent bookstores. So that's Garden District, Maple Street Bookshop, Octavia. We have once upon a time, though I don't think we were good in getting there, but to Blue Cypress up on Oak
Street.
And also we have ways to order the issue online if you live out of the city and certainly if you would like to become a subscriber.
And what's your website?
It is www.uno.edu/bayou.
And you do have some wonderful features on the website about what people are reading, which I always wildly enjoy.
That's our blog, which is a separate address, but you can certainly find a connection to it on our website. And we've really enjoyed putting together that online component to complement our work.
Well, make sure to check it out. We've been talking with Joanna Leek, who's the editor, and Carrie Chappell, who's the associate editor of Bayou Magazine. Thanks so much for your good work.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Susan.
Libraries have inspired their share of interesting songs, and Jimmy Buffett, that singer who also loves books and writes them, has a sweetly romantic song, Love in the Library, on his Fruitcake CD. She was standing in fiction, he sings. Of course she was.
On the corner of Government and Bay Avenue, the old doomsday fanatic wore a crown of kudzu. Sirens were wailing in the Gulf Coastal heat, and it seemed like the whole world was in forced retreat. Paid no attention, revolved through the door, past the newspaper racks on the worn marble floor. Near Civil War history, my heart skipped a beat. She was standing in fiction, stretched high on bare feet. Love in the library, quiet and cool. Love in the library, there are no rules. Surrounded by stories, surreal and sublime, I fell in love in the library once upon a time.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The First Tuesday Book Club discusses On the Res by Ian Fraser, Tuesday, June 4th at 5:45 at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple. Claire Main signs Out of the Shadow of Leprosy, The Carvel Letters and Stories of the Landry Family, Tuesday, June 4th at 6 at Octavia Books. Adrian Van Young signs The Man Who Noticed Everything, and Michael Jeffrey Lee signs Something in My Eye, Tuesday, June 4th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop in Bayou St. John. The big event this week is the 21st Southern Fried Poetry Slam, which New Orleans will host for the first time since Hurricane Katrina. This four-day festival, the second largest poetry competition in the nation, will take place in downtown New Orleans. Venues include Café Istanbul, Cathedral Creative Studios, Sweet Lorraine's, Birdie's, Irvin Mayfield's Jazz Playhouse, and Ashe Cultural Arts Center. The literary competition features preliminary bouts and culminates in the Southern Fried Poetry Slam finals on Saturday, June 8th. In addition to the commemorative moon pies and RC colas of Southern Fried tradition, this year's champions will receive more than $7,000 in cash prizes. The event is proudly presented by the 2012 National Poetry Slam champions, Slam New Orleans. For more information, check out southernfried2013.com. Jean Morgan Moe discusses In Pursuit of Alaska, Wednesday, June 5th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Today's guest, Kent Wascom, signs The Blood of Heaven, Thursday, June 6th at 5:30 at Garden District Books. John Mosier, author of The Blitzkrieg Myth and a military historian and professor of English at Loyola University, discusses the Nazi Blitzkrieg at the monthly meeting of the World War II Discussion Group, Thursday, June 6th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Megan Burns, author of Sound and Basin, and Brad Richard, author of Butcher Sugar, are the featured readers in the 17 Poets Literary and Performance Series, Thursday, June 6th at 8 p.m. at the Goldmine Saloon. Walter Culpepper signs The Replacement Son, Friday, June 7th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Aaron Greenwald signs A Company Man, The Remarkable French Atlantic Voyages of a Clerk for the Company of the Indies, Wednesday, June 12th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop Uptown. And don't forget, the summer reading program is ongoing at the New Orleans Public Library. Students can win awards for reading 8 books or 800 pages, or earn a bookworm certificate by reading 20 books or 2,000 pages. Check out neworleanspubliclibrary.org for events at a branch near you. Coming up later this month, Michael Alenzell hosts Bloomsday, celebrating the anniversary of the day at the heart of James Joyce's Ulysses, Sunday, June 16th at 2 p.m. at the Irish House, 1432 St. Charles Avenue. Choose your favorite passage of up to 10 minutes. Guest readers include John Joyce, The Brothers Goat, that's Michael Jeffrey Lee and Christopher Helwig, Vincent Salucci, Pandora Gastelum, Herbert Kearney, and me. I'm very happy to be part of this event. The Historic New Orleans Collection with Margaret Media, Pelican Publishing Company, LSU Press, and the University Press of Mississippi will host a summer book festival Saturday, June 22nd from noon to 3:30 p.m. at the collection, 533 Royal Street. This will feature a curated selection of new books focusing on Louisiana history and culture. SOLA, the South Louisiana chapter of the Romance Writers of America, is offering a one-day workshop on self-editing with editor and publisher Liz Pelletier of Entangled Publishing, Saturday, June 22nd at Andrea's Restaurant, 3119th Street in Metairie. Registration ends June 10th and includes breakfast, lunch, and the opportunity to pitch your stories. For more information, check out solawriters.org or email Dawn, D-A-W-N, at dawnchartier.com. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.